Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Mid-Major Madness podcast. My name is Russ Steinberg. I'm joined by my co-editors, Greg Mitchell and Chris Schutte. We are now just a couple days away from the start of the season. We are recording this on Tuesday night. With any luck, this will be up on Wednesday. Season starts on Friday. One thing I think that we wanted to start with, if you've been keeping up with the site at all, you've seen that we have been unveiling the Mid-Major Madness preseason power rankings, our top 25. We've been doing this five teams at a time, mainly just because we want to put Cam's voice on as many videos as possible, because that he just has the best voice, and we know it will get people coming back to the site to hear it. We unveiled teams 21 through 25 on Monday, and the next 16 through 20 on Tuesday, and we'll have 11 through 15 on Wednesday. There are a couple of things that I wanted to touch on from what's been revealed so far, and just kind of based on the feedback that we've been getting. The first one is about St. Louis. They came in at number 25 in our rankings. Greg, I know you follow the Atlantic 10 pretty closely. Maybe you could speak to this a little bit. St. Louis was picked to finish ninth in the A-10, yet we have them ranked. I think a lot of our writers, myself included, are really high on their freshman class and also the fact that they bring back their major contributors from last year.
Yeah, no, I mean, and there are also a lot of high major transfers that they add this year as well that had some excitement last year, but now actually will be on the court. You know, I think it's hard to bet against a talent, and that, you know, that's what they have. And then also, you know, I think this goes a little bit overlooked. You know, they do lose a couple of important seniors from last year, Mike Crawford and Reggie Agbeko, in the front court and back court. But in their KenPom numbers don't really, you know, pair this out. But I felt that by having six wins in the A-10 last year, you know, they beat LaSalle, St. Joe's, and they were really hurt. But, you know, a George Mason who wasn't bad, UMass, which had a disappointing year but had, you know, some talent. I think six wins was a little bit more than a lot of people expected, right? So hopefully, you know, for their sake, it's not only, you know, that he can attract good players, but Travis Ford also seems like on the court had a pretty good first year there.
Yeah. And I don't know how much you guys know about the newcomers at St. Louis, but I've, you know, just been looking at their write up in the Blue Ribbon Yearbook, trying to read a little bit about them. The Blue Ribbon Yearbook picks Javon Best to be the newcomer of the year. He's a Michigan State guy. Chris, you're a fan of the Indiana basketball team, so maybe you've seen him play. Is he a difference maker?
Yeah, I definitely think at that level, he's going to be a guy that can give him a lot of good minutes. Pulling up his stats at Michigan State, I don't remember him being a huge contributor for them, just because Michigan State's always among the best. But I do remember his name coming up. You know, he's about 6'5", 6'6", an athletic wing. He's going to be able to be a guy that can kind of be a defensive force. One thing I really like about St. Louis, and one reason I'm so high on them, is I just think that they're going to have really good guard play. I mean, they bring back Devel Roby, who was their leading scorer last year. Jermaine Bishop was arguably their best player before he went down with, I think he had either a foot or an ankle injury. And then bringing in Jordan Goodwin, who's kind of the prize of their recruiting class. I think he's about a top 50 guard. I think having those three guys is going to help win them a lot of games, especially in the A-10 that has some other teams that have really good guard play.
Yeah, and that's not to mention Adonis Enriquez, the transfer from UCF. Double-digit scorer there, could really shoot the ball as well. Just reading a quote about him from Travis Ford saying he's blessed offensively with how he shoots the ball and how he can move it. I think he's someone that maybe didn't get the recognition that he deserved where he was. He could have a chance to be a really good player on this team too. So St. Louis has a lot of pieces. Maybe other guys aren't sold on them yet. The Atlantic 10 is also very deep this year, which is another factor. I wouldn't say it's the best Atlantic 10 we've ever seen, but it's probably the deepest we've seen in a long time. So just because you're picked seventh doesn't mean you can't, you know, it doesn't mean you don't have realistic postseason hopes. St. Louis probably a year away from the NCAA tournament, but they're going to be a pain in the neck for a lot of teams. Next thing I wanted to talk about, and we haven't quite gotten here in our power rankings reveal yet, but it doesn't take a genius to realize this. Some of the teams that we're going to see towards the top, obviously, you know, the Gonzaga, St. Mary's, URI, St. Bonaventure, A-10, West Coast Conference teams, always listed pretty high up. But there are some really good teams from one-bid leagues. And I wanted to get your guys' perspective on who the best team is from a league that traditionally only sends one team. So for the sake of this discussion, don't count the Atlantic 10, don't count the West Coast Conference, and don't count the Mountain West.
Are we talking about the West, though? Are we going?
I'm talking traditionally.
I'm joking.
Plus, also, this could be a year that Mountain West gets two teams.
Yeah,
because I think San Diego State's very good.
Yeah, I just know that's something that I'm sure their administrations are all freaking out about, you know.
Absolutely. But so, yeah. Traditionally, they get two or three teams in.
Yeah.
But I bring this up because Matt Norlander was very insistent on his podcast, the Ion College Basketball Podcast. By the way, highly recommended if you're a basketball fan. Give that a listen. He was insistent that Oakland was the best team from a single bid conference. I think we're all in agreement that Oakland's going to be very good. But I'm not as convinced as he is. And without giving too much away, I don't think our rankings are going to quite bear that out. So I wanted to get each of your opinions on who that best team is. And maybe it is Oakland. I don't know. Chris, do you want to go first?
I have to agree with Norlander. I'm looking at my polls right now. I had Oakland fifth. So that I'm probably the highest on them out of just about anybody on our staff. I just think that especially in the Horizon League, they just have a lot of talent and they're gonna be really good. I mean, you bring back Martez Walker and Jalen Hayes, who won't be around for I think the first four games, and then you add in a guy like Kendrick Nunn, who was already really, really good at Illinois. I think he averaged about, I got it right here, 15 points, 5 rebounds. I think, I don't know if it was last week or over the weekend, he had like something like 40, 10, and 8 in one of their exhibitions. And I just think when you have that kind of talent at the level of a one-bid league, it's going to kind of lead to being able to dominate and have a pretty good shot at getting an at-large if they perform well in the non-conference, which is always the kicker in one-bid leagues. But even then, they're probably going to be the heavy favorites in the Horizon League or the Horizon League tournament.
Yeah, absolutely. And Greg, what do you think?
Well, I was going to say Oakland too. So you beat me to it, Chris. But I'll, you know, for the sake of argument, I guess I'll say a Florida Gulf Coast, just because their backcourt is so insanely talented. You know, Zach Johnson's a really good player. That, you know, but he's not even the best player on his team, probably, because a Goodwin may be the best. You know, a combo guard at the mid-major level. And they pushed Florida State in the NCAAs last year. You know, had a great win at against UT Arlington at home. And, you know, they're just very talented. And at this point, Joe Dooley's proven that, you know, he is a really good coach and that success is continued there. So they're a team. I don't have their schedule in front of me here. I can pull it up. But, you know, as you mentioned, Chris, that's a team who, they don't really play any high majors here that could, I mean, they have some chances here for some nice wins, like against a Middle Tennessee, UT Arlington again, Wichita State they play. So I don't know if they have the opportunities on their schedule to necessarily make that huge kind of eye-opening win against a high major, but I think we all agree that, they'll be very good.
Yeah, for sure. All right, maybe then it, you know, maybe Oakland is going to be the best from a one bid league. Florida Gulf Coast be very good. I know we're going to hear a lot about Vermont this year. I jumped on the College of Charleston bandwagon way back at the beginning of the offseason, and it seems like everyone is slowly climbing aboard with me. And I think we're going to talk about this again in a minute when we move on to a little bit of Ivy League talk. But I'm an absolute sucker for teams that return a ton of guys, and Charleston brings back all five of its starters from what was a very good team last year. They went 14-4 in conference, 25-10 overall. They have possible conference player of the year, Joe Chile at the guard spot, Jarrell Brantley at forward. He's a junior. I think this team, first of all, very well coached. Earl Grant, I think, is a really good coach. I think they're going to dominate this league, especially with UNC Wilmington being a little bit down this year with all of those departures that they've had. Like Vermont, I would not be surprised to see them run the table in conference. And I mean, I guess Oakland could do that too. I don't know, but I've been on the Charleston bandwagon. Chile averaging 18 a game last year, go along with 3 assists. Going to be entering his senior season. Brantley, 14.2 a game and almost, 8.4 rebounds, shooting 37% from three. Just an excellent all-around player. I think the talent level that they have is kind of in a league of its own in that conference. So that's the team I was looking at, and I certainly mean no disrespect at all to Oakland, because I agree with you guys, they're going to be an excellent team. And they might end up being the best team from a one-bid league. I don't know, but I don't think it is as clear cut as people were saying. Greg, do you want to weigh in?
I was going to say, because you mentioned UNC Wilmington, I was watching the highlights that they posted on their account from that jamboree they had over there.
Yep.
And I'm going to say his name wrong, but Devonte, is it a Kasok or a Kaycock? I don't know if it's a hard C or a soft C there, but that dude was slamming it all over the place against UNC. Now, I don't know what the final score was, but that was fun to watch. I don't know if you guys have seen that. He's super exciting. I just thought I'd mention that.
Yeah, absolutely. We actually had Torrance was at those games.
Yeah.
And I think he was impressed as well. And no, I do not know how to pronounce the name.
If I remember right, did he lead the country in field goal percentage last year? Is that right?
Yeah, he shot something like 80%. My biggest question with him is going to be just how he performs without without those two guards. They're Clemens and Fleming. Their name escapes me right now. But I know Torrance was pretty excited about how he's performing without those two guards, at least early on.
Dude, those alley-oops were flying just for like pure entertainment value. You should find those highlights. I was pretty excited. So that's that.
All right, so maybe Wilmington ends up being it's hard to say. It's hard to call the defending conference champion a sleeper, but maybe they are in that conference. Maybe they do end up being a little bit better than we expect.
Yeah, I mean, it's always hard to make predictions about a team, especially when they get in a new coach like them. So I think we won't really have a good feel on how good they're going to be until probably, I don't know, late December, early January.
Yeah. I think
can
you're
we agree that
right.
They have the coolest uniforms.
Yes.
The Colonial.
Yes. I will not fight you.
They're pretty sweet. Yeah.
Next thing I wanted to discuss from here. We introduced Yale and Harvard into our rankings today. I think it was Harvard coming in at 16 and Yale at 20. I don't think I'm spoiling a lot to say that Princeton is coming soon as well. They're also a very good team. If you look at the preseason Ivy League coaches poll, or I think it was coaches and media poll, those three teams were picked to finish in the top three and all within 7 points of each other. So there was basically no separation at all between them, which is why even though Harvard was the favorite, we don't have them ranked the highest. Princeton was actually ranked third, but they're going to end up with the best ranking from us. I think our staff tended to give a little more credit to the defending champions that returned some really good pieces from that team. But I was wondering what you guys think about the Ivy League. I think we could agree it's a three-team race. It's definitely going to be one of them. I happen to really like Harvard. I recognize Yale is bringing back Mekhi Mason, which is going to make them a lot better. I recognize Princeton's really good as well. But I just love those freshmen who last year from Harvard who are now sophomores. Towns, Lewis, I don't remember the other names. They're all really freaking good. And they carried the bulk of the load last year. Bryce Aiken was the one who I forgot. So I'm really high on Harvard. I would probably go Yale, Princeton, 2-3. Chris, what do you think?
I'm actually going to take the opposite route. I've been the highest on Princeton out of the three. I just think that when you bring back a couple guys like Miles Stephen and Devin Kennedy, Devin Kennedy is one of my favorite players in all of college basketball. I think that he's going to get a little bit more free reign in the offense now that Spencer Weiss and Stephen Cook are gone. And I just think that
that's a good point.
Anytime you bring back two guys capable of being like all first team caliber players, especially in a system like Princeton that's going to take care of the ball, they're going to defend, they're going to get a good shot every time down. That alone is just a recipe for winning a lot of games. And like you said, I do have a little bit of a favoritism towards them just because of how well they performed last year in the league. But I think that with those two guys and a couple other young pieces from the recruiting class, they're going to be really tough once the conference play rolls around.
Yeah, Greg, what did you think?
I was going to say Harvard, but you kind of sold me there, Chris. That was a good pitch. Yeah, that was a good pitch. yeah, I'd probably go with Harvard. I mean, I certainly agree, Russ. I like that kind of high ceiling potential, you know, as these guys progress from their freshman to sophomore years, you know, especially under a guy who's now proven he's obviously a really good coach. So I don't know that much about the Ivy League, but I do like just kind of how high the potential is at Harvard. But, you know, all three are good teams.
Yeah. And I think we all knew just by looking at the rankings that was going to be a good recruiting class that came in for Harvard last year. I didn't expect them to be as good right away as they ended up being. I think the interesting thing to watch from them this year, we're going to find out real fast how much they actually miss Siani Chambers. Their leader on the floor, him and Ed, I'm sorry, anyone who knows Harvard knows whose name I'm trying to pronounce here. Zina, their big guy who got all the rebounds. We're going to see how much they really miss those two. But I really like the pieces that they bring back. And, you know, we do need to touch on Yale as well, because they're going to be a really good team. They bring back Mekhi Mason. He got hurt beginning of last year, had to sit out the whole year. But before that, was the team's, I believe he was their leading scorer, averaged about 16 a game. He's going to be joining a team that returns Alex Copeland and Mione. Oni, now a sophomore, was an excellent freshman for them last year. So they're going to have plenty of firepower, too. I mean, there's a reason why these three teams were all picked so close to each other, and it's going to be a lot of fun watching these three teams battle it out.
I think one thing that's going to be interesting is just kind of how the standings end up shaking out towards the end of the year. Because with how the Ivy League is doing their tournament, they're just doing the the top four teams, correct? Is that still the case?
Yes. So that is correct.
So essentially, whoever gets the top spot is going to get to avoid one of those other teams, because presumably it's some combination of the three is going to be the top three. So the teams that finish second and third, they're going to get stuck playing each other in the first round, which is which sucks, because
right.
I mean, anytime that you have to play one of the best teams in the conference in the very first round, albeit it's only a 14 tournament, it's just sucks. It's a bad draw.
Yeah. Now, on the other hand, though, Blue Ribbon picks Penn to finish fourth. So if that were to happen, the number one seed in the tournament would have to play Penn on its home right. court in the first round, which isn't exactly a gift either. So, yeah, I mean, it's the perils of having a conference tournament, which they introduced last year, and it makes it a lot more exciting, but it also could cause some headaches for, say, the regular season champion or the two seed or whatever. But anyway, it's going to be a lot of fun. And I think the last thing I wanted to touch on.
Oh boy.
In our rankings. Oh, buckle the hell
smash
up.
Smash that Greg button.
Smash that Greg button. Chris, you and I could just sit back here, because we had Grand Canyon and New Mexico State. I believe they were 17 and 18 or 18 and 19 in our rankings, right next to each other. I think pretty clearly they're going to be the two best teams in the WAC. Greg, if you could tell us who is better and why, and then, like, you know, spend another 25 minutes telling us about all things WAC, that would be great.
We'll hang up and listen. Get your popcorn ready. Get those fires burning here and, you know, relax. So I actually had Utah Valley second in my preseason rankings. But that being said, I think that all three teams are very even. The thing with New Mexico State is, and this is something I'm writing about for tomorrow, is they've not had the past week has not been kind to them. They kind of had a sluggish game against Southeastern, which is a Division II school. It was at home. They allowed 83 points, only won by 7. And then they went to they didn't go to Lubbock, but they played Texas Tech in a charity exhibition in Midland, Texas, and just got blasted by 30 points. And we're just not competitive. And again, these games don't count. And I know people scream at you on Twitter about that. Or people will scream that sky is falling. But, you know, it's certainly not a good sign. But I mean, who knows how much it means? I don't know. I mean, it's tough. I like New Mexico State. The reason I had them as my preseason favorite was the people I've talked to in the WAC really love their backcourt. Sadie Nadir was the team's leading scorer before he was hurt after, you know, I think it was about 13, I think it was 9 games last year, and he was averaging 13 points a game. And he was a sophomore, and he'd taken kind of a huge step forward. Extremely athletic. He looked like he'd turn a corner. So if he's healthy, he's a guy that I know some people have said could be a league player of the year. And then they have their point guard is going to be AJ Harris, who's a transfer from Ohio State and was a 4-star recruit. He's on the shorter end, but he's, you know, extremely fast. And has huge shoes to fill because he's, you know, taken over for the WAC player of the year and Ian Baker. So the reason I like that is because those two, you know, have such a high ceiling. And then you've got a front court with Eli Chua, who very well, you know, is another guy that could be league player of the year, you know, if things broke right for him. So, you know, I like just the overall skill on the team. That being said, there's a lot of question marks. Again, they have to replace the league player of the year, who was their point guard. Braxton Huggins, a transfer to Fresno State, and he was a great 3-point shooter and a great scorer. And they also lost some fringe players too that were in the rotation. So they're going to have to piece together, you know, their rotation. They did get Zach Lofton from Texas Southern, who was a SWAC player of the year, but, you know, he's a good player, but he's a very inefficient scorer. So I don't know really how well he'll translate in a team concept more. So that's New Mexico State. So I like their overall skill, but there are question marks. And Grand Canyon is exciting. Like, there's no doubt about that. And I definitely want to get your guys' thoughts on this. You know, they have Josh Braun, who's the best player in the WAC and is an offensive force. And they have some other good players too around him, like Oscar Freyer. Some people called him, you know, high major potential talent. You know, and it's really exciting for Dan Marley that if he can land people like that, you know, what the potential of this program is with all the support around it and all the excitement and all the resources. So yeah, they've got some really good pieces. They lose Dwayne Russell, who was the leading scorer in the WAC and was their a point guard, and you know, he could get in the lane whenever he wanted. And I think that losing a guy like that obviously hurts. And they bring in a Casey Benson, who's not that type of player and hasn't really played point guard as much the last few years at Oregon, or at least last season, but is someone that can obviously handle the position and is like the perfect addition. I don't know if they have the front court to, if things go right for New Mexico State, to compete with New Mexico State in the tournament. You know, they can certainly win, obviously, but I give the edge to New Mexico State because besides Canton Vernon in the front court for Grand Canyon, they really don't have anyone else who's established. They have a couple exciting freshmen, but I like the starting five for New Mexico State. I think it's a little bit more complete, even though they haven't played well right now. So I'm going to take a breath, and then I'm going to let you guys, I'd love to hear your takes on this.
I wanted to ask you, because it sounds like from what you're saying, you know, you give the edge to New Mexico State, but it's relatively close. But you said, you picked Utah Valley number two. So I'm wondering how they factor into this. And is it, you know, a situation like we just talked about with the Ivy, where one, two, and three are going to be that bunch together? Should we be talking about Utah Valley in the same breath as those other two?
Yeah, I think we should. I think we should, just because they're very interesting, because I think they've got something like 14 players that have come through Mark Pope have been transfers. So he's kind of doing the Iowa State thing now at that level. And he's getting guys from like places like BYU, obviously, which is right down the road, but also Xavier, Oklahoma, Utah. So all those guys from those schools originally are on the roster right now. And they have a senior point guard. You know, they've got a really good three-point shooter in Kenneth Ogbee. They have a really good front court piece in Isaac Nielsen, who was quietly one of the, you know, best forwards in the WAC last year. And the guy that kind of pushes it over the edge for them is a called Manyang. And he's a 7-footer that went to Oklahoma, got into some trouble there, was dismissed. But he had like a insane block rate in very small minutes the year Oklahoma went to the Final Four. So he's the type of guy that you just don't see in that type of league, right? So if he can put the pieces together, they just have a really complete, experienced team that I think is just as capable of winning the league as the other two. But yeah, no, I think all three are right there. I think my Utah Valley infatuation might be a little bit more than other people. And another thing about Utah Valley is they play this super distinctive style because they play so fast, right? And that can be hard to deal with sometimes. So yeah, and I think we also should mention Bakersfield, because they lost what essentially, you know, Jalen Arrington, Dedrick Basel, who are kind of the Matt Smith too, who are kind of the headliners from the team that went to the Final Four in the NIT last year and won the league tournament the year before and played Oklahoma in the tournament. But they do still have kind of the supporting pieces from that. And they have Damian Thurum, who's probably one of the most exciting mid-major scorers as there is, because that guy will throw it up from anywhere at any time. So I think that's a team that has shown that they've got program momentum and they can compete. And frankly, if they were, you know, if they found their way to the final of the WAC tournament and kind of scrape by one of the other three, it wouldn't surprise me. I don't think it'll happen. But no, I think those three teams are very close with Bakersfield right behind.
Yeah.
Do you think the Grand Canyon hype is a little bit premature, just given kind of all the buzz that's focused around the program, given, with Dan Marley as their head coach, all these videos that surface about their home court advantage. And does it seem like we're anointing them a little bit too quickly before they have really proven anything?
Yeah, yes and no. You know, it's really disappointing. I think you pointed this out today, Russ, in the write-up for the power rankings at the beginning, that they don't really play anybody this this year in the non-conference. I think that was you that wrote that, right, Russ? Or did I see that somewhere else?
I don't recall, but that sounds like something I would say.
Okay, yeah, and they don't. Like, they play St. John's in Phoenix. Yep. They play Boise State away, and that's it. Oh, excuse me, and Louisville on the road at the very, very end, and Illinois at the end. But in the first month and a half, they don't play anybody. So, you know, I wish right away we could see, okay, yes, this is real. This is going to be a really good team. And I think they are a really good team. Again, if you land a guy like Oscar Freyer, Damari Milstead was another kind of well-regarded recruit. He's a freshman point guard that they got out of California. So, I mean, he's landing guys that suggest that, you know, this is going to be a real thing. And you can't deny kind of the home court advantage and all that energy around the program. And they've had some nice wins. I mean, they've beaten San Diego State, I think, the last 2 years, one of which happened in San Diego. And the other thing is that, you know, just because of who he is, you think, oh, is Dan Majerle just a name? Is he just kind of, you know, attracting guys because of who he is, and that's all he is? And I don't think he is, because, like, they've never had a losing record in the WAC, right, without being eligible. They've never had a losing record overall. They won 27 games in 2016, 22 games a year ago. They won 11-3 in the WAC in both years. So, you know, with kind of that transition purgatory working against them, he still has had them competitive. Now, granted, it's not a great league, but I think, yes, I wish we could see it right away to know, okay, this is real. But I do suspect that this is going to be, I think this will be a team that'll be as exciting as everyone thinks it'll be.
Yeah. And one quick point about their scheduling, just because I have their schedule up in front of me. You know, they do, as you said, they play at Louisville, they play at Illinois, and obviously, by comparison, those are, I mean, they're legit programs. The thing is, if they go and they lose by 30 in those games, you don't learn anything about them anyway. No. Looking at their schedule, though, like, Robert Morris has been a little bit down. If they play Robert Morris in a typical year, that would be one where you could learn a lot about them. Same goes for Little Rock, down, but usually pretty good. San Diego, back like when they were on their upswing, like, there are some good mid-major programs in here that just haven't been good lately. And if they had played some of the better mid-majors, some guys either in our rankings or receiving votes, those would be games that you would look at and say, you know, we could really learn a lot about Grand Canyon in this game rather than, you know, at Louisville or at Illinois.
Yeah, no. And I mean, it's certainly a schedule that is going to set up for some polarizing conversations, because, you know, they don't leave the state of Arizona until December 13th. And if they go through that and they've got, like, I don't know how many wins that would be, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, like 9-1 at that point with the lone loss to St. John's, like, their fans are going to be in your face saying, like, look, they were one of the best mid-majors there is, right?
Right.
So it will be interesting the second half of that non-conference schedule to see if they can compete, like you said, because if they don't, then, you know, what have we learned?
Exactly. Sorry, Chris, did you have your hand up?
Yeah, but I was just going to mention, I think that that game at Boise State that Greg mentioned, I think that's probably going to be the first real kind of litmus test for them to see if they're actually legit mm-hmm. or not.
Yeah, absolutely. Any other power rankings points to make, or could we move on?
I'm good.
Greg, not that I can think of.
You don't want to talk about the WAC for a while longer?
I mean, I'll keep going if you guys want me to.
Unfortunately, we have a finite amount of time.
Exactly, yeah.
Greg, is Utah Valley...
Oh, go ahead.
I was going to ask, is Utah Valley getting a win this weekend?
I think some of their fans think so. But hey, no, I don't know. They're not. I think that's the first question. And I don't think Mark Pope obviously doesn't think he's going to win either. But I will say, because they are so experienced and because they have guys from Oklahoma, Xavier, Utah, and so on the roster, it would not surprise me in the first like 10 minutes, 15 minutes, maybe even the first half at Kentucky, if it's a, you know, they're down by 4 or 5 and you start getting like notifications, you know, that, oh man, Kentucky's, you know, this is an upset alert. I think Kentucky will win by like 25, 30 points eventually. But I think I was telling you guys this in Slack today. Just it would not surprise me if they, because they're so experienced, hung around for a little bit, especially in that first game.
All right, we're going to hold you to that. I think moving on now, the thing I wanted to mention, and maybe we could talk about it real briefly, if I could just plug my own shit. Are we going to get hit with like the advisory now? Cause I said shit. I don't know.
No swear words.
I'm sorry.
No
that swear was words. An accident.
I think Ben
say shucks.
Shucks. Ben sorry. Sorry. This is a family podcast. Anyway, by the time you hear this, we'll either be a day away or we will have officially begun taking submissions for Silver Sword 2017. If you're not familiar, it is the contest I run every year where the object is to pick the winners of the Feast Week tournaments. This year, I do things a little bit differently in terms of scoring, but the principle is still the same. Pick the winners and you could get some prizes. Just finalized this today, actually. The winner of the Silver Sword this year is going to receive a pair of shorts and a shirt from 199.com. If you've never been there, give it a look. They sell awesome, like retro 80s, 90s college basketball shorts. They are incredible, and you'll get a nice t-shirt from them. Second place will get just the t-shirt. So that is a reason to play, if nothing else. And just because I know we're going to be plugging this to death on our site because I make those decisions and I want to. If we can just take a look at some of these tournaments, they're fun anyway. Why not? I have Chris Daubertine's huge early season events primer up right now, which has everything you'll ever need to know about it. And there are a lot of good mid-major teams playing in these Silver Sword tournaments. The first one that catches my eye is what is known as the Puerto Rico tip-off. It won't be played in Puerto Rico due to the hurricane that had to be moved. The quote-unquote major teams playing are South Carolina, Iowa State, and Tulsa. But a couple of interesting mid-majors there as well in Illinois State and Boise State. I think that could be a tournament where maybe one of those mid-majors emerges victorious, especially with South Carolina losing a lot of pieces from their Final Four team last year. I don't know if you guys have thoughts on that or if you want to talk about maybe another tournament that catches your eye. I think this is a really good year for mid-major teams in these November tournaments.
I'll go off the beaten path. Oh, I would say, go ahead, Chris.
No, I was just going to say the Puerto Rico tip-off, I would even throw in Western Michigan with that, with Thomas Wilder. He could be a guy that kind of comes out guns blazing and puts on a show against one of those bigger programs.
Yeah, and I was just going to kind of go off the beaten path here and say the Great Alaska Shootout, because this is the last year
R.I.P.
of that event. Yeah, right? Yeah. With Alaska Anchorage has, if UNC Wilmington has the coolest jerseys, Alaska Anchorage, I know they're not Division I, but their logo is sweet. It's kind of like a totem pole like thing. It's kind of cool. But yeah, so that's the last one, and you know there aren't that many teams that really catch your eye there, but College of Charleston is there. Idaho's there with Victor Sanders, who's a really good player, could be Big Sky Player of the Year. Though I guess Tyler Hall's in that league, so he probably won't be. But yeah, no, for sentimental value, I'd put that one out there.
Yeah, that's a good call. And it's sad to see that one go, especially if you could think back to like the late 90s. Well, Chris, you can't, but Greg, you're old like me. But that used to be like the Maui Invitational. That was a huge deal, that tournament.
Yeah.
Duke would go up there.
Yeah,
Cincinnati.
Yeah.
So, you know,
I think all the blue bloods have been up there at some point. Cause I remember when I wrote about it earlier in the off season, like Kentucky, UCLA, I mean, all the schools have been up there, UNC at some point.
Yeah. We are also getting a new tournament this year that we're very excited about because we talk about mid-majors. The Bahamas Showcase is going to feature 8 mid-major programs this year, including some of the top ones around. The matchups are going to be first round, Vermont will play Bradley. Coastal Carolina will play Texas San Antonio. Northern Kentucky, a tournament team last year, will play James Madison. And Iona will play Weber State. Those are going to be some good games. I think we would probably agree that Vermont is the early favorite there. But Iona is a great program. Weber State's always good. Northern Kentucky coming off of a tournament appearance. And we would have to ask Harry this to confirm, but I thought he liked Bradley starting to turn their program around. So a lot of interesting matchups there. Oh, and Coastal Carolina is pretty good as well. It's going to be a really good tournament down in the Bahamas.
Yeah, I think I think this is in Harry's piece. I think Bradley was one of the youngest teams in the country last year, so that could be exciting. Certainly.
Yeah, well, watching those young teams come back with a year of experience. I mean, again, we talked about this with Harvard. Like good things happen, so that's going to be interesting, and that could be a good early test for Vermont too. Vermont's one of those teams they shouldn't have too much competition in the America East. I mean, maybe, you know, it's possible Albany gets them for a game. Albany's going to be pretty good. But they're, I think, pretty decisively the best team in that conference. We could assume, or maybe we shouldn't assume, that they're not going to beat Kentucky. These could be some good confidence building games for them to play some teams that are a little closer to their level and see if they could beat them. Cause I think they're better than the America East, not quite as good as the high majors. This could be an interesting tournament, and a win over Bradley, a win over Iona, that could go a long way if they win the America East tournament to maybe notching them up a line or two, in terms of seeding.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and you know, I'm just kind of scrolling through the other tournaments that are on here. I'm not sure there's any that really calls out to me. I think it'll be interesting to watch the Paradise Jam only because it's being played on Liberty's home court now. That one was relocated as well. You never know. Weird things happen in those situations. Maybe Liberty knocks somebody off that we don't expect. I am excited to see St. Louis play in the 2K Classic. Hopefully I'll be at the Garden for a game in that one. And that could be a situation where we see right away if their ranking is warranted or if we were just really far off on that. See, Gulf Coast Showcase, I think Missouri State's by far the best team there. VCU is going to Maui, so that will be interesting. Richmond and the Cayman Islands Classic will be good too, because there are some good mid-majors there along with Iowa and Cincinnati. Looks like South Dakota State, UAB, Louisiana, and Wyoming, so that could definitely be one to watch. Good test for Richmond, maybe a team that we've underrated a little bit as a site going into this year.
Yeah, I think a lot of that was due to the loss of TJ Klein. Absolutely. He carried such a heavy load for them. And I know they had it was an injury. I don't remember who it was.
Quan Four.
Who was the guy that got... Mm-hmm. Yeah. I know he got hurt last week's, and I think as a whole that people are just kind of generally down on the A-10, given that you have programs like Dayton and VCU who might not be as strong as they have been in recent years. I think there's been a little bit of maybe people just kind of underrating the conference as a whole.
Yeah, I think that's definitely possible. I think that's all I had to say about these tournaments. Also, you know, obviously if you haven't played the Silver Sword before and you want to find me on Twitter and I'll get your name down, you could just tweet us at mid_madness, the mid-major madness handle, or just me directly at Russ_Steinberg. And we'll get you playing. We'll also share the link on the site as well. Anyway, Greg, I know you have a treat for us, something new to the podcast.
That maybe there should be no shortage of these. We should always have material from this.
Yeah, take it away. We have a new segment here on this podcast.
All right, so we're going to do some mean tweets here. And I don't know, I guess we should qualify this by saying if you're listening and we read your handle, we mean this in the nicest possible way. We're just giving you a hard time because you gave us a hard time.
No, we don't. Okay, that's a lie.
Let's be malicious about this. So the first one we'll go to here, and I think we'll probably, after we read and provide some context for it, and I guess we'll just alternate here. But this is from at Yuli Rosh. And this was when we released our West Coast Conference power rankings. He says, yeah, right. At St. Mary's Hoops, quote unquote, the favorite over hashtag Zags, a coach by few who's 40-9 versus SMC in his tenure as a Gonzaga's head coach. Sure. Adorable.
So two things about this. Number one, he really could have benefited from the 280 characters that everybody yeah. got today because he abbreviated the hell out of things. Mm-hmm. Number two, would he perhaps like to come on the podcast to discuss?
I think that should be the point of this thing. You're more than welcome to come on. This is our invitation to you to come on and discuss your thoughts here.
In all seriousness, trying to say one team is better than another by quoting results from years ago is not a very strong argument. There is a legit argument to be made about Gonzaga that they are the most talented team in the West Coast Conference, even though I think St. Mary's is better right now. You could certainly make that argument. Saying Mark Few is 40-9 against St. Mary's, that doesn't mean anything to me because these are two new teams.
Yeah, I know for sure. And the St. Mary's of Randy Bennett's first few years, and I know that's only a handful of wins on that record, but that's not the St. Mary's that we have now. Like, the program has Absolutely. Been elevated quite a bit. So I think that is relevant too. Whereas Gonzaga has been, you know, maybe not as high as they are now. They've been obviously a lot higher overall over that time.
Right.
So I don't know if one of you wants to go ahead with the second one here, because I love this one and I'll always be using this one all season long.
Chris, you want to do it?
Sure. This is from Lope98 Brian at Mid Madness at WAC Sports. GCU will always be number one in the WAC. Best coach, best student section, huge fan base.
Do we all have the same problem with this tweet?
The thing about this tweet is that you could substitute 95% of GCU Twitter, and this is something that they've been saying all off season. It is exhausting. Best coach,
sure.
Okay, right. Yeah. Best student definitely. Section. Definitely huge fan base.
Sure.
Okay. There are other schools that also have large fan bases, which, believe it or not, fan bases do not have any impact on how good the basketball program actually is.
The problem I had was he didn't say anything about how good the players are.
They don't matter. It's all window dressing.
It's not going to matter anyone. When Dan Marley's coaching the Suns,
that's
next year.
True. Ooh. He could have said best stock price too, and he wouldn't have been wrong because
that's very true.
They are the only one with the stock price, so therefore they are the best one.
Give me like 5 seconds, and I'll pull it up.
Yeah, we should also plug Chris's weekly stock watch, where
it is up 23 cents today, up to 89.14.
There you go. So buy stock now.
Yes, absolutely, buy stock now.
All right.
This next one's my favorite.
So this one we're actually going to have to talk about a little bit because I don't think the tweet isn't that mean, and there's nothing he's saying that's really wrong, but there kind of is. It's from at USA Rev. He says, at Mid Madness, at Rhody Men's Basketball. We wrote something about Rhode Island, and this was in response to it. Love when at Mid Major Madness covers major conferences. Thumbs up emoji. First immediate problem with that is you tagged the wrong handle. We are not at Mid Major Madness. That is an old handle that the site used to use that we no longer have access to. So no one sees that. But you did tag us as well. You tagged the right and the wrong handle in there, which is hilarious to me, but sure. Next thing is you're saying the Atlantic 10 is a major conference and not a mid-major conference. And this is where we come up with what the definition of a mid-major is. And we could argue about it all day. And you could make an argument that the Atlantic 10 is not a mid-major. You can make the argument that it is. It depends on how you define it. The purpose of our site is to cover schools that do not have a blog dedicated to them in the SB Nation network already. For the most part, you know, there are some mid majors that do, UTEP, Gonzaga, etc. But if we don't cover Rhode Island, if we don't cover VCU, if we don't cover St. Joseph's, UMass, St. Louis, who is? Yeah, you'll get an article on the mothership occasionally. ESPN will write about you occasionally. The other, you know, college basketball sites, NBC, CBS, the other, you know, smaller blogs out there will write about you occasionally. We're here to represent you in the SB Nation network. Whether you want to call yourself a mid-major or not, you are not a Power 5 school that is getting all of the attention from the mothership and beyond. If we don't cover the Atlantic 10, nobody in this network will, and you're going to be even more upset. So either take our coverage and like it or go somewhere else.
Applause, yeah. Resounding applause from my end here.
You guys couldn't hear it, but I dropped my microphone.
No, you, yeah, dude, that was like a campaign speech right there. I'm ready to go vote for you. That was great.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate it. Oh, and also, would you like to come on the podcast and discuss?
All right. So I'll do the next one here, which the context here is this is in response to us stating that Lamar was the team to beat in the Southland. This is from at Peyton WXYZ. He says, at SFA Men's Basketball, at SFA Sawmill, shots fired. What universe is a mid-major madness living in? ?
So I guess my one thing about this one is that I remember when these posted, I love SFA's fan base. They're great. They're all active on Twitter, but they were livid that we had Lamar number one. And I don't know enough about the Southland to, you know, discuss it, but it was awesome that they were just so fired up about that.
Yeah. Well, I remember editing the Southland preview, and doing a little bit of research about the league just to familiarize myself with it. Because again, it's not one that even we cover probably as much as we should, or at least we haven't lately. And it that Lamar pick is somewhat of a bold one. They're not picked to win the league, by other sites, but they're supposed to be pretty good. They've got a guy, Colton Weisbrod.
Good name. That's a good name.
Player of the year. Yep. Like they're going to be a good team. It was a bit of a bold pick, but I have nothing wrong with it. And, you know, Stephen F. Austin, yeah, they'll be all right. Corpus Christi will be all right. You prove us wrong. Who cares? Like, these are preseason picks. They mean nothing, but they're here for your enjoyment.
Yeah, and you know, I'm so fascinated by SFA because we've seen the potential of the program, but, you know, I know they had a lot of injuries last year, and I know they ended up having a nice season. Yeah, but you know, it's not like the coach is gone, you know, he's not there anymore. It's not Brad Underwood. It's not even, you know, Danny Caspar. And maybe a Keller's a good coach. He very well could be, but you know, it's not like they've been this established program for like 30, 40 years. Right. So,
right.
I think it's good for us, you know, as a site that, covers mid majors. If, you know, I want to see a program that's at that level, that's good for everybody. But, yeah, I mean, let's see it.
Yeah. By the way, I said they sucked last year. Like by Southland standards, they didn't. They went 12-6 in the league, but that's 12-6 Thomas in the Southland.
Yeah, he wasn't walking through that door.
No, 12-6 in the Southland is not 12-6 in even the Atlantic 10. Like let's be real here. They were not very good compared to where they had been. Now they do bring back 4 out of their 5 starters from last year. They figure to be a lot better. They could win the conference. I don't know. But like let's pump the brakes on saying what universe is mid-major madness living in. But hey, whatever. You want to get upset about the rankings, go ahead. There are other things to lose sleep over, in my opinion.
My favorite thing about these type of tweets are that the people tweeting them usually just assume that this is the opinion of the site as a whole, when yes. In reality, it's oftentimes the opinion of somebody that specifically, like, normally covers that particular conference. And it's just funny, he, like, shots fired, what universe are we living in?
Right.
Why does everything we write have to be a referendum on how we are as a site or what we think? Like, it's an opinion, like, power rankings are an opinion. Like you said, preseason rankings don't matter.
Wait,
like,
I thought it was I thought it was site policy that we hate Stephen F. Austin. That's not right? Like because of this?
Oh, that's okay.
No, we only hate
Oakland. Oh, that's it. Okay. We'll have to write that into the bylaws next time. Okay.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah, seriously, you got to read the fine print.
So, yeah, well, I think you bring up a really good point, Chris, that like this is one guy's opinion. And I can already tell you, when we release the top 10 in our power rankings, there are some teams that are really not placed where I would put them. And that's just because that's where the votes fell. We had 11 or 12 people voting, and enough people disagreed with me. There are 2 or 3 teams ranked 6 through 10 that I think should be top 5. So, like, I'll be honest, I don't like our top 10 the way that it looks right now, but I'm not going to lie. I'm not going to fudge the numbers. This is what the majority of the site thinks. I respect everybody's opinion. And the good part is that we have games starting this weekend. So where we are wrong, and we're surely wrong somewhere, that's going to be discovered very quickly, and our rankings will adjust. And in theory, they're going to get more accurate as the year goes on.
And the beauty of power rankings is that we're all wrong, but collectively we're just a little bit less wrong.
Yeah, I love that.
No, that's very true.
It needs to be inscribed somewhere.
It's something I think we said maybe a dozen times this summer while we were doing these rankings. Like, not a single person felt good about theirs. So, like, we were hoping like we would all be wrong in like different ways, so they all canceled each other out and ended up being somewhat good. And honestly, as a whole, I do think our rankings are pretty good, but I just do have some objections when we get to the top 10. And we'll get there and we'll discuss them then. And
would you like to come on the podcast and discuss?
We will discuss. Oh, and
perfect.
I promise you the people in our mentions will discuss as well.
So I had one more on here, which Russ, it's at the very bottom here, and I think you should read it just because they are your new friend in the AAC.
All right. At Patty Beamer. How we doing? Patty says, hey now, you kicked WSU, Wichita State, out of the mid-major group and then use a shocker pick? Either you still love us or you owe Wichita State some royalties. This was in good fun, obviously.
Yeah, and I think this was we wrote something about Aliza Johnson as an NBA prospect. So, you know, it's the sad reality of our photo database that for the most part, if we're trying to do a picture from the Valley this year, it's probably for a while still going to be that team playing Wichita State.
Yeah, like I hate to get too like insidery about how this works, but SB Nation has the photo database available from Getty and USA Today, and that's what we can pull from.
And it's great. It's great. Like, it's high quality.
Oh,
it's
fantastic. Right?
Nothing to complain about.
Absolutely. But it does hurt us, the mid-major site, a little bit, because they don't tend to send a lot of photographers to mid-major games. So when they do, these are the photos that we get, and they're really good photos, but you're going to see sometimes they get a little repetitive, especially towards the end of the summer when we haven't had any new photos added in 3 or 4 months. So, you know, you deal with it. Like, that was the photo we got of Elise Johnson. I'm sure 3 weeks from now we'll have some better ones because Missouri State will have played some games. But for now, that's what we have. So I'll also mention we do have somebody who's going to actually get out there and photograph some games for us at the mid-major level. So that's going to help us out too. So we are looking forward to that. But, you know, sorry, Patty. Good luck in the American. You guys will probably win that this year.
I miss Wichita State already.
I do too.
Please come back.
I think I miss Greg Marshall and his press conferences the most.
And you miss his wife.
I think Pat Forty misses his wife.
Chris, so, you can't put that great stuff out here an hour and 1 minute into the podcast. That's got to be, you know, not that what you said at the beginning wasn't great.
No, I saved the good stuff for the end. That way, if you're not listening, then you're missing out. Good.
So yeah, since we've been going for an hour, why don't we just go to trivia now, Chris? Can we reward our listeners who have stuck with us the whole way?
We can. I actually did find some trivia. Here we go. Of the schools that we consider to be mid-majors, i.e. non-Power 5, Big East, AAC, which program has the most NCAA tournament appearances all time?
Ooh, I think I know. Can I say it? Is it BYU?
It is BYU with 29.
Wow.
You know why the only reason I know Greg. That? Well, okay. Let's just bring this back. The only reason I know that is because I know that Mizzou and BYU are the schools with the two most NCAA tournament appearances without a Final Four.
Final Four.
Wow.
So I'm not happy I know that.
Who is second highest? We talked about him on the podcast earlier.
This is interesting. Is it Princeton? Is it an Ivy League school?
It is Princeton with 25.
Yeah, the Ivy League, that's always a good bet because they've been around forever. So you know they've had a ton of opportunities, only 8 schools, and like 3 of them haven't won since like the 50s. So the odds are good.
Yeah, Penn was actually tied for third at 23.
That I wouldn't have guessed. That's interesting.
New Mexico State at 23, Western Ooh. Kentucky at 23, St. Joe's 21, Gonzaga, UNLV, Utah State at 20, and then the other one I had listed was St. Mary's at 9.
I've got a question for you. It's not a trivia. It's more of just discuss. Which will happen first? Let me phrase it like this. Will Rick Stansbury at any point coach Western Kentucky to an NCAA tournament appearance?
Is there an alternative?
He doesn't coach them to an NCAA tournament appearance.
No. I think...
I'm not saying this season, in his tenure.
No, I think he either... He seems like a kind of guy that's going to jump at the first chance he get at a step up to maybe like a low-level Power 5 or AAC school.
I agree with that. It seems to me the likelihood that either he jumps or he falls in disgrace is much higher than Western Kentucky going to the NCAA tournament. That's just a thought.
And to be fair, the odds of every coach in the country falling in disgrace has increased much astronomically. Yes, in the last
yeah, absolutely.
That is not just a Stansbury thing. All right. We want to get the hell out of here. Do we have anything else we want to add?
Hey, man, thank you guys basketball. For making my night and letting me just spew all that nonsense about the WAC. It's great.
That's what we're here for. And if you're still listening, let us know how many times you hit that plus 15 button while he was talking about the WAC. I kid. All right. Well, I want to thank you all for listening to the Mid-Major Madness podcast. For Chris and Greg, I am Russ. Thank you so much. And we will hear from you, or you will hear from us, I should say, very soon. We'll promise to record another one, you know, without waiting 3 weeks this time. So have a good night and enjoy the start of the season.